We made this.
Yeah. Right, I need 10 seconds with nothing happening to do the noise we do. Mind you, it's Carl editing, so we can fuck around as much as we like.
God damn.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey.
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf here on the We Made This podcast network. My name is Mark Adams and I am your host. And with me at this time, I am being joined by Carl Bryan. Hello, Carl.
Awooga, Mark.
And I'm also being joined by Matt Latham. Hello, Matt.
I was going to say awooga as well, but Carl beat me to it.
And I'm sure anyone who's got a vague idea... Actually, no. How many people have actually watched what we're watching? Probably not many, because there aren't many episodes. We're watching fucking CyberZone, innit? And that is where the term awooga that Craig Charles used first came from. So CyberZone was an oddity on British television, in as much as it was way too ambitious, way too early. And if I'm going to put it into a description that is three words... weird VR nightmare. Yeah. But nightmare as in K-N-I-G-H, as in the kids' teleprogram Nightmare?
Yeah, I mean, this was developed by Tim Child and Broadsword, who were the guys who did do Nightmare. I mean, and you kind of get that in some of the layout and the sets. And, you know, when Craig Charles is introducing the contestants, he may as well say, enter stranger.
Yeah, it really does feel like... a weird nightmare, almost as if they could have called it Nightmare VR if they'd have themed it a little bit less technically science fictionally.
Well, this did lead on to them attempting Nightmare VR, which if you do ever look, I mean, just because I'm quite sad and available, ladies, I have looked up like attempts to bring back Nightmare, and there is footage out there of what Nightmare VR looked like, and... yeah, this was like the primer for what was like, oh, maybe we could use this for Nightmare, but it looks shocking.
Yeah.
Single ladies.
I mean, you've got to admire the ambition of this project. You do.
Yeah.
But it was too early. Far, far too early.
Oh, yeah. This is what, 93? We're in Mega Drive time.
Yeah, 4th January 93 to 8th of March 93. It had one season and only one episode survives, which is the episode we watched.
I don't know how long this is going to take, but I'm gonna slightly get to a point, but bear with me. So many, many years ago, before my finally hitting a podcast premise with Pickadisc, I had several attempts at podcasting. And one of them was a podcast called Your Perfect TV Show, which at some point I would love to bring back, but it was just a logistical nightmare. And I'll tell you what it was. It was basically in two parts. The first part would be I'd be speaking to someone and I'd be asking them to pick four TV shows, their favourite TV shows of all time. But the only caveat is they didn't air at the same time. So progressively getting... the timeline of someone's favourite TV series. For example, one of my first guests was We Made This Lord and Saviour, Tanya Black, who picked Game of Thrones, Lost, Alias and The X-Files. And basically I interviewed him about why he liked it, which parts of these things did he like the show, etc, 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 and gauging an idea of his taste. And then the second half was picking the common elements of those TV shows, combined together and crafting a new TV show with them live on recording, combining all these elements of the shows that they liked to craft what would have been the guest's perfect TV show.
Incredibly hard work.
It was, and as much fun as it was, it's a logistical ball-like, and I ever so all the time want to bring it back. But I've not been able to figure out how to do it properly because I love doing it and it's a lot of fun, but a logistical bore. Like, Now, the point I'm getting at is that I feel as if something happened and I must have subconsciously nicked that podcast idea from someone who had a conversation with someone whose favourite TV shows at the time was Nightmare, Games Master, there was another one I've forgotten as well. But basically, this feels like a combination of so many different things combined together a bit too early. So,
do you mean the Crystal Maze?
Crystal Maze, yes, yeah. So, like, you've got elements of the Crystal Maze, you've got elements of the kind of those weird phone games that you had and going live, and SMTV, where you have to go press, you have to push buttons. You push a button on the phone, and basically, you weren't controlling it, it was just flashing up a light so the person with the joystick behind the set couldn't move depending on what the person was pressing. It felt like someone had combined all these elements, goes, oh, I really like that from that, I really like that from that, and then put them into one TV show. And that's what this felt like. It felt like it was capitalizing. I think Games Master started in 92, I think.
It was around about then, yeah.
So, and that suddenly became a hit. So this felt like it was capitalizing on that, incorporating elements of previous ideas that Tim Child had. So Tim Child took elements of Nightmare and other parts and thought, okay, hey, what can we do with this? And and just kind of made this thing, which I don't think fully hit. So, my point being is that I feel like someone's just taken a bunch of, oh, I really like that. How do we mix them all up?
Yeah.
And I think that's what we got with CyberZone, but I don't think it hit properly.
It was a messy amalgamation. You're absolutely right. And what I find really odd about it is that it was on the BBC and Nightmare was on ITV. Nightmare was much more sophisticated, well thought out, and a much better fucking program, let's be blunt. Mm. That was earlier than this. Why?
Well, Nightmare was running still while this was on, because I think Nightmare was finished in 95 and this is 93. But they also did, I can't remember the name of it, but it's Broadsword did one for the BBC, which was like Time Busters. Where they were traveling around on a double decker bus, and I remember like actors from Nightmare would pop up in that, like the guy who played Pickle would turn up in it as playing a different character. So they had got previous with the BBC, and it was a lot bigger budget because it was all done like school kids, and they'd it had that element of treasure hunt to it, where it's like, okay, well this week we're in, Chatsworth House or somewhere like that, and the whole adventure would be based around that. And it was a bit like a LARP, because all the characters would be wandering around and the contestants would find them and all this kind of stuff. So it feels a bit weird. It's almost like we're taking elements of that and elements of Nightmare, that's my clothing range, but Nightmare, and we're making CyberZone where they're running around trying to find people in incredibly slow VR.
Yeah. And I think it's worth acknowledging that whilst we're already getting into the, oh, this is really bad, they had the most powerful possible computers they could have at the time in 1993, which had a whopping 8 megabits of memory.
I know. It's... Wow. When you think about it now, it's like...
8 megabits isn't even a Word document these days.
No. I mean, it shows how fast the technology's going. Even in the case of VR, because we're looking at now, like, you can get Oculuses at home or PS VR at home, and it's readily available. It's taken a long time, but if I was in a virtual reality... what's the best way to put it? I went to do a big VR game where you're in a big room and you're running around and you're on a spaceship and shooting for my friend's 40th birthday. And it was so immersive. And we played two games. One was on a spaceship, and where the wall did the best way to describe it is did a Inception where it curves up. And I am on the flat of the floor. I know I'm on a flat floor, but your brain is just going, oh God, I'm walking up the wall. You know, it's so immersive.
Hasn't that been a problem with VR in general, though, that people are getting motion sickness from it, even though they're not actually moving?
I suffer from motion sickness in cars and especially coaches. And I didn't find that. I was worried about it going into this because I was basically in VR for 2 hours. And it's so immersive. You get lost. Like, I did a spaceship one and a zombie one. And the zombie one, you're being attacked by zombies. So you kind of haven't got time to go like, oh God, I feel kind of unwell. It's like, I've got to defend my thing against zombies. It got to the point where the attendant pointed out to me that I went to, because you get given guns, like a Ghostbusters backpack to shoot the zombies with. But they pointed out to me that I basically tried to pistol whip a zombie with the barrel of my gun to get him away. It was like, yeah, you can't do that. It's like, it'd be great if you could, though. I just swung for a zombie with a gun and because I was that into it. But I did try this type of VR when it first came out, and it was in like arcades at Skegness, and it was like Cyberzone. It was so slow.
I think I tried it at a similar time. I went to the Games Master convention, and I remember, you're absolutely right. If you had a gun, it had like a big bullet at the end of it. If you fired the gun, then the bullet, you could see it. It was so slow. It kind of just... Yeah, it was really weird that it was supposed to be a bullet, but it went at the pace of, you know, a very slow thing. But I also remember being absolutely blown away by it in 93. Let's think, 93, I'd have been 15.
Mm.
So it was the coolest thing. I was into video games at 15, much more so than I am now. The video game tattoos I have are all retro games, you know? Mm. And I remember VR being the coolest thing. I don't really remember this. I remember I did watch it because I did remember the catchphrase that Craig Charles uses. What was it? Build me a Borg. I remember that. And I do. So I must have watched it. Mm. And I must have thought that it was cool at the time.
Watching this back, I remember Run the Zone. It's like the energy doesn't match. The live action stuff, like Craig Charles is really up and ready to go and yeah, and then it cuts to Cyber Swindon.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But this show was, it ran for one series. There were, I think, either 8 or 10 episodes. But like I said before, there's only one episode that's ever been really publicly accessible. Up until relatively recently, there were none, and there had never been an episode of this available on YouTube, and there was just like clips. But this one's been up for a couple of years now, and it's only got 13,000 views. So it doesn't seem to me like there's a fondness for this show that other shows that were contemporary, like Nightmare, really, really do have.
I won deodorant because of VR.
What?
I'm sorry, what?
So you was talking earlier about your experiences with VR at the time. I was waiting to chip in with that.
How did you win it?
Elaborate.
So Mark will probably know this place better than Carl. A place called Merry Hill.
What, they're in Dudley?
Yeah, in the shopping centre. I can't remember how old I was, but this was like mid-90s. And there was a like a VR thing in, there's like an auditorium section outside of where Marks & Spencer's is. And there's all sorts, it's where they usually put, there's like weird things like displays or live exercise or whatever. And at one point bands play there. And they had set up with like a VR helmet. And there was getting people to go on and do this, play this like mini game on this thing where you chase the shark. The shark with like, and you walked around and you chased the shark and you had to try and hook it, but you was underwater and stuff. And it was sponsored by Lynx. It was Lynx, and they was promoting their brand new Lynx scent called Atlantis.
I don't remember that one.
Oh, no, I had Atlantis.
Yeah, Link's Atlantis. So
it didn't last, though, did it? Africa's still going, but yeah. Atlantis didn't last.
Yeah, so Link's Atlantis, and there was at one point I was using it, and I was stuck. At one point, I was stuck behind a rock, and I could hit, and I was there trying to chase this shark, and I got, because I'm underwater, and I've got no idea what I was doing. I was like 7 or 8 at the time, and like I was on this rock, and I could hear the attendant goes, "Oh, for fuck's sake," grabs it, moves me, and I turn around, right, and this massive VR shark just went at me. I went, "Wah!" Right, and I suddenly saw this virtual reality kind of Link come towards me. And then as I took the helmet off, right, this guy handed me a can of Link's. a can of Link's Atlantis for free. And he went, "Well done, you've got yourself a can of..." Right, and I'm like... So this is what I'm, 8 or 9, so... I've not reached puberty yet, so kind of like the kind of teenage boy smells that you spoke that generate.
I was gonna say, but on that first spray of Links, you became a man.
Yeah, and so yeah, so I just so and then I just basically handed this like can of Links, and that was the first time I ever used VR. And I got a can of Link's Atlantis.
I think around that time, VR was expected to be the next big thing and was expected to improve quicker than it did.
Yes.
In the mid-90s, VR was huge. Then it kind of like was like dipped away. People didn't really talk about it. And it only became a more prevalent thing maybe 5 or 6 years ago again. There was like a big dip in VR where they just couldn't seem to get the technology right.
Yeah, so like... Well,
that didn't stop them launching it when it was shite.
Yeah, so basically they didn't have the processing power to try and make it realistic. So you had, I think, virtual racing, I think, for the Mega Drive, I think, was built to try and have Sega go into the virtual reality realm. But then, like, it didn't work, so they pretty much marketed it as its own game, like just like a normal racing game, but they charge £70 for it.
Shit,
and then yeah, and I can't, and god damn it, I listen to a bunch of retro gaming podcasts as well. I think a bit later on, I think Nintendo attempted to do the Virtual Boy,
yeah,
which was Nintendo's attempt at doing virtual reality, but the Virtual Boy was basically a headache-inducing mess where when you put it on, you just... It was like the game...
Was everything red?
Yeah, it was just red lines. So it was like the red on black. So you could... It was like wireframe stuff from the early 80s. So it's like you're playing the Vectrex, but on your head.
It was an insane percentage of people that got migraines from it as well, wasn't it? Like, really kind of dangerous. I would love to have a go on a Virtua Boy just to see if I'm one of the 60%. I've pulled that figure out my ass, but it was high.
Then
I would love to know if I'm one of the 60% that gets brain crippled.
I've tried one. I think I was I don't think it was a Cambridge one, but I was at like a retro museum or a retro gaming museum or display or something where they had these old ones, and they had a Virtual Boy, and there was a time limit that they wouldn't let you use it for longer than a certain amount of time. Yeah, it's bollocks. It's awful.
Yeah.
The world's most dangerous handheld console. Fucking hell.
I mean, I think as well with its recent kind of resurgence in the last few years is game developers have started to figure out better. I think it's the way the game markets have changed as well. We've got things like, I don't know if either of you will have played these, but Five Nights at Freddy's.
I'm aware of it, but I've not played it.
Yeah, which is based on your POV, and you don't move around much at all. And it went for 4 games, and then it did a VR. And apparently the VR game is actually quite good.
Horror's not a genre that I particularly like at all. No. So horror video games is one that I'll take a wide, wide berth.
I mean, one that could be interesting, I don't know if Fraser's ever gone on about this to you, Mark, is when I think it was the PS4, they released the Spider-Man demo where you could swing around New York City.
He's definitely played the Spider-Man games, but he knows that when he starts talking about modern video games, my eyes glaze over and he can just talk for a quarter of an hour and I'll nod and smile and think about cocks.
I mean, I love badminton too.
I'm pretty sure there's a virtual reality for that, Mark.
That's the other thing, is there's always been the joke of like a technology doesn't really take off until it can be used in porn.
Is the pornographic VR then?
Yeah.
Damn, I need to get myself some VR.
Yeah, there's a very good bit by Dara O'Brien, because Dara O'Brien's a big gamer, where he's talking about VR, and he said it's not really taken off as well as it could because it couldn't be used in porn yet, because no one would feel secure enough that the wife is out of the house to put on the headset and go to town. Because you wouldn't hear or see them if they came back.
I mean, we haven't done Gunman of the Apocalypse yet, but Red Dwarf very much did that joke, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, fucking hell. Well, I can't wait to cover Gunman of the Apocalypse. That'll be a four-hour episode, though. But we're not doing Gunman of the Apocalypse. We're doing CyberZone. And CyberZone was, as we've established, a VR-based game show. And it pitted two members of the public against two celebrities, highlighted names that appeared as celebrities. They were all sports people. And there was Colin Jackson, Tessa Sanderson, John Barnes, Adrian Morehouse, a few others. And the two in the episode we watched were two that I hadn't heard of, but they were race car people.
They were rally drivers. They were the world,
rally drivers,
the world women's rally champions.
And what we, and I can't avoid this because there was a important thing about this man. John Fascinu was a guest, and it is infamous that he stole the term awooga, which he used regularly on Gladiators, from Craig Charles.
Yes.
And holy shit, Craig Charles says awooga a lot in this episode.
The weird thing is there's a few times in this episode where there's Craig Charles doing a wooga. There's no one chants what Craig Charles wants them to chant.
No.
People do chant in this, but it has nothing to do with Craig Charles prompting them. It's like he really wants a wooga to take off, and I don't think he gets a chant going once.
Yeah, we'll come back to the live studio audience, I think. Yeah. But the awooga thing, he uses it as a kind of affirmation of scoring in the game.
Yeah. And
I didn't know it was from here. I didn't know it was from here. But that's how much of a cultural thing it is that I was like, at first, I didn't realise that Craig Charles originated it. I thought he was nicking it from Fashion New.
No, he used it to some extent, but nothing like as much as he does in CyberZone when he was presenting Robot Wars. Mm. And that's where people thought that he'd nicked it from John Fascinu, because it was actually the other way around, because this program had already been forgotten by the time Robot Wars happened.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was originally designed as an affirmation of scoring a point in CyberZone. And okay, give me 30 seconds to do my John Fascinu rant. I can't not. He is a horrible, horrible human being. When his brother came out of the closet, he attempted to bribe him to stay in the closet. He said he wouldn't get changed in the same changing room as his brother because he was gay. He blamed his mum's cancer death on Justin coming out. And he refused to talk to his brother from the day he came out to the day he took his own life. And even in 2012, he claimed his brother wasn't gay and was just an attention seeker. The man is, without a doubt, a thunder cunt. And he stole a wooga. Thanks, boys. Carry on.
Well.
Am I wrong? Is he a thunder cunt?
No, you're not wrong.
Nope, I couldn't definitely not have that rant, and I apologise. We'll move on and we'll be lighthearted again. Wasn't VR funny?
Yes. Well, is this? I don't know. Technically, I don't know if this is actually VR, because they weren't wearing helmets, were they? They were just looking at screens. So technically,
it was
I don't
think they could have cheated. They could have just made, you know, I think, I don't know, maybe the technology wasn't there for them to have done something which didn't look like VR.
Because
it was just fucking odd. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And
it's,
yeah.
Yeah, because I think what it was just, they're just playing kind of very early 3D games, or to put it in comparison there, stuff that looks exactly like the new GTA remasters. Topical satire.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I laughed out of politeness. I didn't understand what you were talking about, Matt.
Basically, they've remastered the best three GTA, well, the non-HD GTA games.
That's the one where you're supposed to do missions, but you drive around, fuck the hookers, and then kill them and get your money back, right?
That's a stereotype. Yeah.
It's a true stereotype, but...
Thing is, when the trailer came out, I was like, this actually looks really good. It's not like, you know, super HD, but I don't think anybody wanted it to be that, because...
It's polished cartoons.
Yeah, polished cartoon.
And I quite like the look of it, yeah.
Yeah, it looked really nice. And then when it came out and people started to play it, they were like, oh, there's a lot wrong with this.
There's a lot of bugs in it. There's like, yeah they released a patch which solved about a week after, which had about 120-something... bugs fixed. A lot of it is to do with the fucked up rain physics.
But isn't that the norm with modern video games? That basically they release a game far too early. It's absolutely borderline unplayable, but looks pretty, and so no one cares.
This will not mean anything to you, Mark, but a bunch of people listening will understand when we say this is Rockstar North, and they had no... Rockstar North have no excuse, because they are Rockstar North. If there's any gaming company at the moment that could afford to spend, to put every single person on the books to make a HD remaster, then it should be Rockstar North. It's very embarrassing. Yeah, it's like, but then again, there is precedent to it, because EA Sports are pretty much fuckwits when it comes to stuff like this as well. The AAA game developers kind of forget to do quality assurance.
Yeah they do.
Yeah,
and they treat their staff quite badly as well, or they used to. They said they don't anymore.
But, so moving on from me generalizing about modern video games because they scare me, the theme tune to Cyberzone really reminded me of Nightmare, but kind of, we're trying to make it science fiction-y.
It does feel a lot like they took a piece of music that they didn't use for Nightmare and then kind of let's sci-fi it up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But at the very start, you've got your theme tune, which is thematic. Mm-hmm. And if you hadn't watched Nightmare, you wouldn't have had the criticism I had. But Craig Charles genuinely seems to be having a whale of a time. Yeah. And
he is a much better game show host than he is pirate.
I agree with that, but I think he actually enjoyed this, whereas probably when he was a pirate, he was desperate and would have taken anything. Whereas I think this was almost a passion project for him.
I think he's got a lot more, I think, charisma as a game show host. I mean, because we covered Moneybags, and I think it's a different energy, but he does carry Moneybags quite well. And the difference in Robert Wars when he took over from Jeremy Clarkson is infamous. But then he has a kind of genuine, I think he generally finds the thing interesting and has a lot of fun for it. To it, even if it seems like neither him or the contestants know exactly what they're doing.
it's always weird to me, because I've never had Craig Charles down as a nerd. I've always thought when Craig Charles does stuff that it's nerdy stuff, that it's because of Red Dwarf and that he's kind of leaning into it. But with this, I think I'm wrong, because it's very apparent that he's well up for it, although he does call the audience cyber scum. Or filth, cyber filth.
But I think you're right. I think when you think about, particularly in 1993, your stereotypical gamer nerd, they didn't look like the man presenting this show. Craig Charles was young, hot, fashionable, and kind of edgy in his fashion as well. He was genuinely cool, kind of like the kind of guy that I would watch telly and go, fuck, he's cool. And that wasn't your stereotypical nerd. So I think putting Craig Charles in this role as the almost exception of a guy who likes video games, but he's really, really cool, look at this guy, was an absolutely smooth move. Because if you are a nerd, you want to be cool. If you are cool, you wouldn't watch something with a nerd.
Yeah. I mean, look at the tassels on the jacket. This is a cool dude.
In 1993, he was fashionable. He's not now fashionable, but he's 1993 fashionable.
Yeah, he does look... I mean, in the Captain Butler one, we mentioned... I don't think we actually mentioned it, but he looks like he's in probably the best shape of his life.
His bottom certainly was.
It's a great bum. But he, you know, he's thin, like the cheekbones are, you know, he looks in good shape. And this looks like he's in great shape as well, even though this is beforehand. He's a very handsome man, which I don't think gets played up enough. Obviously, when you're playing an absolute slob as your main sort of role, people probably don't tend to look at you as like, oh, Craig Charles is quite sexy.
Mm. He is, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely.
So the other main character, because I do feel like he's borderline playing Traegard, but like cool Traegard. Mm. The other main character, who was, I guess, the equivalent of Lord Fear, was Thesp. But he just didn't feel like he had much to do.
See, now, Thesp, I think, is less Lord Fear and Traegard and more Games Master.
Because, yeah, true.
Because he was seemed to be setting the challenges in exotically cyber places named Cyber Swindon. and given the challenges as if he was like trying to be Patrick Moore. That bit I was convinced was kind of heavily influenced by Games Master rather than Nightmare because of the structure of. Like, pretty much, Craig Charles might have said, Games Master, what's next? And then that's literally what he was doing.
It's a weird one to me, Thesp, because I get the feeling he was supposed to be an antagonist of some kind, but it doesn't come across that way. And I can't remember the actor's name, but
John Great.
That's it, John Great, who's in a lot of Inspector Morse.
He is.
He was a weird choice. I kind of felt like if you wanted a proper antagonist in VR, they should have gone with someone the same age or only slightly older than Craig Charles, just to give a more antagonistic nature. There we go.
I think that what they probably... It looks like they probably wanted someone either like an ex-doctor, so... either Tom Baker or Colin Baker or something, someone perhaps that can kind of ham it up a bit more, or some kind of recognisable name. Again, going back to Games Master, the kind of the ace in the hole for Games Master was that Patrick Moore has that kind of unique voice, that kind of unique kind of... It's gravitas with a voice that doesn't sound like it deserves gravitas. I think that if they probably didn't have the money for it, but if they kind of wanted some kind of sci-fi cult name to go with it, because like with the reboot of Games Master, they went with Trevor McDonald, and Trevor McDonald's done and is absolutely nailed it. But like some of the names that were being thrown were kind of fantasy wish casting, like oh, we should have like Patrick Stewart as Games Master, which could work, but he's too famous. Or people were then were throwing around either Tom or Colin Baker. And I think Colin Baker would make an excellent Games Master, actually.
I heard Maura Stewart at one point, and it was like, brilliant. I want to see that.
Maura Stewart as Games Master probably work as well. But there's a kind of like cultish kind of like thing with these kind of game shows where the opportunity to have someone that probably wouldn't play an antagonist in a drama has a chance to do it. And I think they missed out in perhaps either, again, they probably couldn't afford to, having a slightly more well-known name playing Thesp.
This was before he'd done his major roles, you're right. And I feel like Thesp is just like a weird amalgam of Games Master and Lord Fear. And you can't make him like Lord Fear because it isn't really like Nightmare where it's the players against the game. It's two sets of players against each other and he's just kind of hanging about. So any kind of threat is limited because he's not really who you're competing against.
I wondered if he's originally was supposed to be like a VR Holly sort of thing and it was just going to be the voice.
I think what it probably could have been is that if, say, like a virtual reality, because again, if you use Crystal Maze analogy, there's a lot of crossover in the Crystal Maze here that technically Thesp could have been like, I don't know, like the equivalent of Richard O'Brien or Ed Tudor Pole, like the master of the maze or whatever the cyber zone is. And that this is like, and then you've got kind of like Cray Charles and these interlopers trying to invade, and it's the keeper of these zones trying to defend it, or just saying, I don't, yeah, you can try and get in, but you're not going to get in.
So more like Lord Fear then.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think with Nightmare, from what I remember, because it's been ages since I've seen it properly, but I know Mark has seen it quite recently, a couple of years ago.
I binged it all during lockdown, mate.
my memory of Nightmare is that it's a living, breathing world that the players are going in. So there's kind of like a whole world of characters and there's a society, civilization that they're interacting with, which isn't the case with this. This is just a fictional world, well, a cyber world. There's no kind of universe or world building to be done in Cyberzone. So
true.
Yeah, whereas like Lord Fear, I mean, technically you could fear have a whole narrative in Lord Fear where, again, like you say, the villain is the protagonist of their own story, where Lord Fear is trying to protect whatever the name of the realm is in Nightmare from Traegar and these kind of weird interdimensional invaders that keep trying to nick stuff that don't belong to them.
The reason I was wondering why, if he was originally supposed to be VR and a voice, because he has got a fantastic voice, because there was three immediate questions. Is if he's VR, why does he look human and everybody else looks like a Borg? Why is he dressed like the Colonel?
Because he's finger looking good.
Yeah, that's the bit that gets me. Why is he dressed like the Colonel? And why is Cray Charles interloping? What, it's never made really clear.
He does feel a bit like a kind of watered down reckless Rick from the Crystal Maze. But again, the Crystal Maze is a very heavily, easily comparable program to this. Because it is kind of like people going around doing challenges in a zone. And I don't know. I felt like there wasn't as much peril as something like the Crystal Maze. There was no lock-in. There was no way that you could lose. You could just do badly at the challenges.
And
it made it a lot less exciting than the Crystal Maze. If there was, I don't know, for example, if the buggy could have squished you, that would have made it really cool.
That would require them to develop and animate a squishing animation.
Yeah.
I do like the fact that when they're piloting the buggy, they go and sit in the remains of a burnt out car.
It didn't seem fair either that at one point they had people in a buggy and then on the opposite where, so the show worked in as much as you had a solo run for one team, a solo run for the other team, and then both teams in the zone at the same time. The first solo run, they had a buggy. The second solo run, they had a helicopter. So it seems to me that it's not really very fair that it's a different way of being the antagonist to the other team. But I say that, it was already fucking boring. At least there was a virtual helicopter to look at.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going up against, you know, sports people as well, the fact that if they give them, I suppose it adds the competition to the contestants if the sports people have got a better weapon or equipment to use. And they seemed a lot more adept at using the helicopter than they did the other team using the buggy.
I suppose, seeing as they were rally drivers, they couldn't really have put them in the buggy because they'd have been a bit of a bringer.
Yeah. When they sort of went, oh, they're rally drivers, it's like, that is probably the best background you could come from for this. Because you've got, you know, you've got someone navigating and somebody, you know, leading anyway. It's a really good idea to get them in it.
So you basically go around these zones, going into different rooms and solving puzzles, like a puzzle on the floor where you had to tread on certain tiles. There was another one which was basically play your cards right, and there were maybe five or six. By the end of this episode, we'd seen them all at least twice, and it did feel like their budget was all spent on their 8 megabit computer, and they just didn't have enough depth in these zones and these challenges to make it, well, anything other than not very exciting.
This is probably, you know, the engineers were probably weeping with joy about how well they'd come out.
Yeah, true.
Because this, at the time, this would be, you know, we're still in 16-bit in terms of game systems, so this would have been the pinnacle.
Yeah, you're right. Wasn't it around 93 that Starwing came out, or Star Fox outside of the UK?
Probably, yeah. I mean, it's, if we're thinking about it, 95 was when the PlayStation came out, roughly, 95, 96.
True.
And those years, a lot of people probably, I don't know how you feel about this, Matt, but those years of between like PS1 and probably PS3, in terms of actually games that have lasted in 3D, it's a rough patch. It's really a rough patch.
Well, true.
I'll put it into context. I think the first 3D survival horror game was in 92.
Mm.
So we'd already had Alone in the Dark. So and that was, I think, a piece that was on the PC. On the PC, and I think it was on the Mac as well. So we had 3D games already, and the original Alone in the Dark looked a bit slightly better than this. But yeah, we're in the early days of 3D. I mean, at the time it was like, oh my God, how are they ever going to improve graphics better than this? But
there's a reason why a lot of these games are being remastered now. Like, if you look at the Resident Evil games, like if you look at the very first one, it's, you know, it's good, but it's very blocky, and you can see why the first chance that they had to do it, they remastered it.
So out of curiosity, I'm just looking at things saying the evolution of 3D games, and one of the first 3D games apparently was from 1981.
Oh, right.
Which was 3D Monster Maze from 1980, actually. No, sorry, 3D Monster Maze was 1981. First ever commercial 3D video game is Battlezone from 1980.
Yeah,
okay. And I think you've got to realise that these graphics were probably really, really cool for the time. They just feel really shit now because, you know, it's 2022, not 1993.
I think as well, what's happening is that you've got basic VR and the tools and the engine to develop the games they've got is probably quite limited, so they didn't have the base things that didn't have the base things. So nowadays they can easily chuck something in the Unreal Engine, hire a bunch of people, a Fiverr, to do a couple of assets, and then able to, and they can mock something up in like a month or something, which allows them for some basic.
I mean, if you look at all the mini games that people are playing in CyberZone, where they go in, one's basically play your cards right,
yeah,
and you know. Again, as Matt says, you can either go into the Unreal Engine, or a lot of people who make mobile games use, like, oh God, it's completely gone out. Build, the Build engine. And is it Build? The one with this cube? Oh, I can't remember. But yeah, there's, there's an engine that's very freely available for people to use, and they can make games like this. So, you know, it's like, I always joke that Grand Theft Auto Online, which I play a lot of, and I'm sure Matt's probably played at some point, isn't one game. What's that?
Once and hated it.
Yeah. It's not really a game. It's a giant map with a load of mini games in it, because you can go play tennis, you can race cars, you can play golf, you can do this, you can do that. You can even do, like, you know, gambling. It's basically like a console compilation of little games, and that's kind of what CyberZone is.
So it's like the Wario games, but with hookers.
You're really caught up on this hookers thing, aren't you?
That's all I've ever seen is, like, hookers.
This is Mark, Carl.
Mm. So, yeah, no, that's true.
I'll have you know, I've never needed a hooker.
Unless it was a rugby player.
I have slept with a rugby player. I don't know what he was, though. Was he a prop or a...
He was that night.
Isn't one of them a headbutter? Isn't that one of the roles in rugby?
I don't think officially.
That's what he said. But no, you've had games like RuneScape or Second Life.
Yeah.
Second Life is like a massive online virtual thing, which
still is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's still going. I remember having a look at years and years and years ago, and wondering why the hell people like it, because it's ridiculous. I mean, Minecraft's my understanding of Minecraft is that it's online thing that you can do stuff on. Man, I feel old.
It's basically online Lego, I think, Minecraft, isn't it?
It is. I've not played it much at all. There's a survival aspect to it, but I think what a lot of people do enjoy about Minecraft is they can just go and build and just wander around. It's very distracting. You know, you can again, this is why I play online stuff like GTA Online, is if I want to, I can go into a server that's just me and go driving. I can't drive in
just
real life.
Just you and hookers.
Yes, Mark.
Just Carl and hookers.
I don't need to have my real life put in a video game, Mark, so I don't tend to go... You know, every day is hooker day.
But that's what CyberZone was missing. Hookers. That's right. That's actually a valid point. I expected this to have kids. Well, let me get there.
Yeah.
I expected this to be for kids because I hadn't seen it for a long time. I remember watching it as a teenager and thinking it was cool. But I expected it to be a children's show and it would be kids as the contestants. I was genuinely surprised that it was grown-ups.
I don't know about that, actually. It was... Because I'm thinking this must have been about the time of, like, you got your early sets of Games Master, and then you've got, like, Bad Influence.
Yeah, I think Bad Influence.
Oh, I loved Bad Influence.
Was around this time.
And I remember at the time people were like, oh, yeah, watch Games Master or Bad Influence. But Bad Influence was more of a tech show. I thought it was more like a review show than a...
It was a magazine show, whereas I think Games Master incorporated the magazine aspects of it, but... had that extra that element of coolness by having the competition element to it. But they had a mixture of age ranges. So you had your university students, you had your teenagers, but you also had children play as well. And it was like, and sometimes you had children going up against their kind of, like, adults and stuff, or quite famous, or almost famously, you had like Bob Holness play his grandson at a game and nearly beat him actually.
Yeah, one of the fun ones I remember is they had Zoe Ball playing a bike racing game, and she was like on where you actually have to sit on a bike, and it was just full of innuendo.
Dominic Diamond, when being interviewed about it, said that his favourite guest was Zoe Ball because Zoe Ball clocked on to the tone, to Dominic Diamond, and was just bouncing off him.
Yeah. He was saying things like, oh, and he slipped up inside her, you know, just stuff like that.
But she was giving the same amount back as well. And he loved it. They're both having a whale of a time making dick jokes, which Captain Butler could have made a lot of could have got a few notes from, but
that's what it was missing. Captain Butler needed to be played by Dominic Diamond.
Wow. So you got your two heats, and there was an element of having the other team try and block you, but it wasn't very exciting because there was no real threat, like we already said. I really felt like the head-to-head, if there'd been some conflict rather than them just being in the same zone at the same time, I thought it was even less thrilling than the original two heats.
Yeah. Also, there was the thing of if you run into Thesp, you get like bonus points. And I immediately, when they said that, was like, they are not going to run into Thesp. Just as soon as they said it, it was like, this isn't happening.
I don't know how they would as well, but
Would it have been like a 2D like cardboard cutout looking thing, just like going across the screen?
Or would it have been like Nightmare with like superimposition or something like that? But how would they have done that? And obviously, there's no other footage out there. There must have been a team meet Thesp at some point, but we'll never see it because there's literally one episode out there.
I get the feeling that nobody did.
Really?
I get the feeling that it's a bit like someone's totally going to knock the coconuts off the Shire because it's possible. Them just going, if you run into Thesp, I get the feeling no one ran into Thesp. And there was a reason nobody ran into Thesp, because he wasn't there. So, maybe in Series 2 if they had a bit more money.
Yeah. So at one point, Craig Charles said, we want pace, we want excitement and thrills. We never got any of those three things.
Yeah, Craig Charles also feels sexy at one point.
He does. I mean, he is sexy, so he should feel sexy.
Did you find it at the beginning of it when he's talking to the contestants, he's a bit of a prick? Where it's like one of them reveals that they'd applied for Mensa, and he said, "Oh, I applied to be Warren Beatty once." It's like, dick.
I noticed that. He's like, it took the mick out of him a few times
for being smart.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't for being smart. It was for being the kind of smart that means that they have to tell everyone that they're smart.
Yeah.
I would probably take the piss out of someone I met who would actually taken time out of their life to go, look at me, I'm intelligent, I've joined Mensa.
But then he does explicitly say that he hopes that the yellow team beat the green teams. Yeah. Yes, he explicitly says that, I think, at one point, where he says, I hope you beat them lot.
Doesn't one of the green team like fake slap him as well, like put his hand on the side of his face? It's like, what's going on here? What happened backstage?
Yeah, there's something weird there. I mean, at first I thought it was him in a prom, kind of creepily flirting with the rally drivers, but I think it's more the case that he didn't like the green team for some reason.
Yeah. So, you know, it was just that thing of like, did he try and chat up Craig Charles's wife backstage, or, you know, has Craig Charles shagged his mum? What's happened there? Because it did feel like he was going for the rally drivers at one point, and they're like, hey, how are you doing? Like the blonde especially.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true. But I do think he was a great host. I think he was really the only redeeming feature of the show.
Oh, yeah. I think he's not. He was fine.
Build me a Borg.
Yeah. Was this one of his first attempts at hosting a game show?
I think so, yeah.
I think it was his first one, yeah.
So this was his lead up to Robot Wars, which...
It was a few years before Robot Wars, I think.
Yeah, I'm totally claiming the specials on Robot Wars.
That's cool. We should do Robot Wars.
I'm surprised that this hasn't been tried again. I know, obviously, Games Master's just come back as we're recording, but I am surprised no one's tried to do anything... Especially when you see now there's people on like Instagram and TikTok who are doing this is going to go over Mark's head, I think, but Matt might have seen it. Beat Saber.
What now?
New for me. Beat Saber.
Is it? Okay, I'll show you a video of it later after. But basically, it's a VR game where you've got two controllers and blocks are flying towards you and you knock them away to music.
There was there's a game Games Master Challenge on the new Games Master about it.
Is there? Right, I've not seen that yet.
But, so it's
like a VR version of BitTrip Runner.
Well, a little bit.
Basically, imagine you've got a blue lightsaber and a red lightsaber in your hands in a VR thing. And basically what you got to do in time to music, you've got to make sure that you cut through red blocks with the red saber, blue box with the blue saber in time to music. And that's the game.
Sounds a bit more like kind of a cross between that game where you cut fruit and Guitar Hero.
Yeah.
It is a little bit, yeah. But some people have been filming themselves playing in front of a green screen, but then they've put the footage of the blocks. So you can you're watching them play the game. And it's just from a sheer technical standpoint, it's quite good fun to watch. But and some people are, you know how you get the person on Guitar Hero who can play Dragon Force, like with their eyes shut on the hardest level or whatever. There's some people on Beat Saber who are just mental and just like can...
My first ever experience of Dance Dance Revolution, the Dance Mac game, I saw a guy who was using all eight things at once on like the expert and get cracked and doing loads of stuff. And then
here's a challenge, right? When we get together, we've not actually managed it because, you know, we formed the podcast during lockdown. Some of us have like popped and seen each other one at a time, but we've never got the five of us together.
Mm.
When we do, I want a Dance Dance Revolution off.
Yes.
Because I'm gonna win.
I better break out the kinesiology tape then.
I definitely think we should do that. We should do Dance Dance. Should we go to Blackpool and do Dance Dance Revolution?
We can do it. It might be tricky getting Colin away from his children.
Comatose Con.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Coma Con.
Hi, I'm Hob, and I'm here live interviewing. I can get Hob to it. I can try and arrange Hob with his to interview the post-match analysis.
No Hob. No.
The Hobcast.
There's no Hobcast.
The Hobcast. I'll speak to his agent.
Right, moving on. I haven't got much else to say about it, to be honest with you. The head-to-head was, by pure luck, actually vaguely tense towards the end with the will-they-won't-they get the final score which will win them the game
thing. No, it wasn't. It's the weakest point. I'm going to contend that, Mark. Because what?
Go on, then.
Okay, because what you've got two teams doing two separate things. You've got Craig Charles seemingly running around like a headless chicken, realizing crap, the other team is doing something, because then he realized, like, for example, at one point the yellow team was doing something, whether it's shoddy editing, the yellow team suddenly was in another room, and then he was focused on them again while the green team was in doing shooting stuff. It was very hard to follow.
It was.
Yeah. I kind of wondered at points that there were moments when the VR buggered up.
Yeah, because I'm sure the yellow team at one point couldn't move. There's a brief reference where they couldn't move and suddenly there was moving again.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that somebody would have to have yelled off stage and somebody else would have walked on and gone, hang on a minute, and maybe had to reboot something, and they've had to kind of fake it.
In Games Master, they actually did challenges at least about two or three times and used the best take.
Mm.
So like if someone failed very quickly, then they'd just reshoot the challenge again. So I'm wondering whether that might have happened.
Mm.
Yeah, and I guess, considering there was no prize, maybe it wasn't a game show per se. It was more they got people on and just tried to put something together with what they got. Because the prize was a virtual helicopter. And I was like, what?
Yeah, I always get a bit confused with game shows that don't have prizes.
It's not exactly a golden joystick, is it?
And they rushed over to a virtual helicopter as a prize, thank you and goodbye. And I was like, what the fuck have I just watched?
It's slightly overlong, but Craig Charles' spiel where he kind of throws about six catchphrases and hoping one sticks. I can't remember off the top of my head, but there's stuff like, but he ends up like into the cyber zone or something, which I think in his head, I think he, when he got to Robot Wars, says, I need to pick something, and then ended up going with the rhyming couplet to end shows on. But he kind of like runs through about five or six different lines at the very end before he mentions the name Cyberzone.
Yeah,
yes.
It's an odd one. I mean, Craig Charles's energy level is a bit weird. There's moments where it's almost like he's trying to figure out at what speed and pace do I do the Awuga? Because I think there's one during the final where Craig's going to the audience, like trying to get an Awuga chant going, and he's like, Awuga. A bit not like Awuga, Awuga. He's just doing it slowly. And it's like this lifeless Awuga. It's like, come on, Craig, you know, find the pace. And eventually he does get it. I mean, by Robot Wars, he's insane.
But I think the atmosphere, the crowd is slightly different, or at least, well, Robot Wars is easier to follow than CyberZone, and has a better atmosphere.
So, I do wonder what the audience actually got out of this, because they couldn't have seen the construction of the bot, because that was clearly superimposed afterwards, because obviously it was superimposed afterwards. So the live audience missed out on quite a lot of what we would have seen on the TV screen. So what do they actually get out of it?
It's quite weird. I've just noticed that the credits are playing in front of me, that there's some Red Dwarf people who worked on this, like Mel Bibby, who did the sets for a lot of Red Dwarf, and that probably explains why the actual set looks quite good.
True.
But I don't know. It's a strange one, isn't it? It's the audience in it look. From at one point, they cuts to the audience, and I swear one of them's wearing a Christmas jumper. But they kind of look like, I don't know, just like Craig Charles has kidnapped them, and is like, watch my game show. There was a very big It's the Crew feel to it. The crew are sitting and watching it. It didn't really feel like an audience. Whenever they cut to somebody, it didn't feel like the audience. If you know what I mean. It's very strange.
So, I kind of almost sort of vaguely, in a pure kind of rose-tinted glasses nostalgia way, sort of kind of liked this.
That was so long.
I know, right? But
I really don't want to, but I'm going to admit that I kind of maybe almost sort of liked it.
I've sat here for an hour and slagged it off because it is naff as fuck.
Yeah.
But I know damn well I would have lapped this up as a kid, even though it was limited, it was slow. I think the fact that Craig Charles was charismatic is important and can't be ignored. And the fact that in 1993, this would have been really fucking cool for a 14-year-old boy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this kind of made me smile, even though I knew it was shite.
Yeah, this kind of made me smile in a nostalgic way. I'm pretty sure I would have sat watching this and turned around to my dad at the time and gone like, this is the future, this is, Dad, look at all this.
But how can they ever surpass graphics like this?
Yeah.
It's so lifelike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mock, Matt, but you know it's true.
Oh, no, I can remember the first time I was... I remember when at the shops just... And I think it was the moment when my parents decided to get me a PlayStation for my 13th or 14th birthday. Because I remember watching, I think, Tekken 3 on one of these little tiny little TVs in a game shop in Maryhill. And I remember my dad going, well, the graphics look really nice. This is Tekken 3 on the PS1.
Oh, yeah.
Which, to be fair, for a PS1 level graphics, they were really good. If you compare to like the first level, first kind of games that was on the machine, like,
I mean, I saw the other day there was a video where they were talking about cheat codes, and one was PS1 one where you could play Tekken or one of the first couple of Tekkens in first person.
Oh yeah, actually,
and that would have been interesting to do in VR. But in the actual video itself, it goes, "Oh, you can play first person. Let's see what it cuts directly to." It goes, "Oh my god, what nightmare is this?" So I can imagine that is really, really off-putting. It's, you know, somebody's attacking you and you're in first person. That I can imagine that's really quite weird. That's why I don't think there are any fighting games in VR. It's mostly gun stuff.
True. So have either of you got anything else you want to discuss on this?
I think it'd be interesting to try with the leaps and bounds that have come in gaming, especially in VR. Now, it would be interesting to see a VR-based game show, but
yeah.
I think with Games Master coming back, that might have taken that away because they can do VR challenges.
Yeah.
I think definitely. It would look better, and I think they'd be able to make it more slick, and I think it would make sense and be more exciting to watch on the telly. Mm. But I don't think there's any way to really get a live audience involved, because essentially it would just be watching a video screen of what's going on inside the game, surely. And YouTubers are already doing that.
I was going to say, you say that, but it's very, very popular on YouTube.
Twitch.
Twitch, yeah.
Mm.
But,
so has the ship sailed because of things like, well, originally on YouTube, but now more prevalent on Twitch? Has that ship sailed, and is there just literally no market for it because it's something that's so oversaturated already anyway?
Now it's something you can do in your home, I'd say the ship has sailed. In 1993, this was something, you know, this was technology that was beyond your grasp by a long, long way. But nowadays, I mean, at my place of work, there's currently 10 Oculuses sat in an office that we use for children's workshops.
Wow.
And stuff like that. And, you know, they all turned, you know, I was there when the order came in and signed for it. And it is very weird. Like, well, this thing now that back then it was like we could only watch on a incredibly, you know, slow version of it in TV. And now there's like, we've got spares of them knocking around at my work. You know, it's, you know, you can play games that you play on a console in VR now.
Well, you've got VR, you've got augmented reality, which is almost similar, they haven't fully implemented in education yet, but I could see stuff like education happening because, like, for those who don't know, there's like augmented reality is like when you have like, you can put a phone with a certain program or an app on, aim it, and on the screen you'll see kind of CGI or computer generated models in certain locations that you can like move around and stuff, and like there's like instances where
I mean Pokemon Go is a very rudimentary form of AR.
Yeah. But I think, like, for example, I remember there's like a sheet of paper with these like almost QR code like things. But if you put like a certain app and put the picture on there, what will happen is like a space shuttle would appear in a 3D model, and you could walk around the piece of paper and then see.
The 3DS did that, didn't it?
Yeah. And I think there's like moments where I can see in the future where like you've got science lessons and you've got like a model of the human heart, rather than put it on a PowerPoint presentation. And PowerPoint presentation, you could actually have like an AR thing in the middle of a room, put like the lens or what could have been Google Glass equivalents, or whatever's in the future, like put the Google Glass equivalents on and see this heart or model of the human body, and then you can walk around and do science experiments. You could do all sorts of things with
we had something similar in the gallery in the center I work at. We did have a large VR exhibition for a long time, and one of those was you could take apart, it wasn't like graphic, but you could take apart a human body, like the heart and everything, and see where everything went and things like that. It was fascinating. I mean, some of the games you see now are fascinating, and a lot of it is wish fulfillment. Like one I saw that I didn't get to play, sadly, was Predator, where you could either be a person in the jungle or you could be the predator, and your vision is predator vision.
That's cool.
Yeah, exactly. And the other one that we saw, but they didn't have it, is Jurassic Park. And I think there is a game element, but I also think there's an element of it where you can just wander around Jurassic Park, which to me sounds absolutely brilliant.
I mean, because you can. That isn't that like where you can like walk next to life size?
Yeah.
Or what we suspect would be the actual size of dinosaurs, so like you could theoretically be walking next to a massive Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah, we were gutted when we realized that they didn't have Jurassic Park in this, because it was like, I want to walk around Jurassic Park. You know, it's you can watch things where it's like a POV video on the telly or something, but to be in something as immersive as VR has become, I mean, eventually I can imagine it'll go to AR. if there's ever like an AR Jurassic Park thing, you know, that's going to be massive.
Yeah.
If you can walk down your street and see dinosaurs, then yeah. But eventually, yeah. You know, we'll all just be tied into chairs with like biofeed. We'll be in back to reality before we know it.
Oh dear. What a lovely way to end it.
Tying it back in, Mark. Just coming out of season 5. I've done my finger guns into my holsters there.
Good.
Yeah.
Carl, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at allmylinks.com/ Mr. Carl. I'm not doing any podcasts apart from this one at the moment, but there's all my other stuff on there. You know, I'm on the Hub, obviously, and Twitter, Instagram, you know, everything's on there.
Matt, what about yourself, mate?
Yeah, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter under Pick a Disc, which is my podcast where I talk to someone about music, blah, 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 blah.
Right, and if you're looking for me, I'm currently doing 2 projects with a few more in the kind of planning stages. Right in the Childhood is a podcast about kids TV and nostalgia and the different experiences of kids TV of different generations. That's RITC Pod on Twitter. Yeah, I also do Chucky Vision, which is a podcast about the Chucky and Child's Play franchise. That's at Chucky Vision on Twitter. If you're looking for me personally, you can find me at Mark Adams HC on Twitter and Instagram, but I'm much better at Twitter. Instagram's kind of like Twitter on hard mode. So thank you very much for joining us for this episode of Shipwrecked and Comatose. And until next time,
I mean, if people want to find me in person, I'm normally hanging around on the streets of Derby till at least 4 a.m.
Or you could have said a wooga.
Or a wooga.
Looking for hookers.
I pay them to say a wooga.
A wooga!
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at wemadethispod.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Right in the Childhood.
But you've never watched Red Dwarf?
Nope. I hear it's got a lot of fandom, like a strong fandom.
It's very culty, and yeah. When you look at it, the longevity is almost second to none. The first episode was in like 1988, right. And the most recent film, which was like a TV movie, mm-hmm. was just last year in 2020.
It's very seems like Dadsu in a way, isn't it? Like the way it's... Like you say, the longevity and stuff like that. And I think it's stuff as well that gets picked up upon, you know, from Americans with UK stuff. You can see sort of why Americans sort of like... Because I feel like more Americans like this stuff than this is what they think of as British TV, is like your Doctor Who's, your Red Dwarf.
Pick a Disc.
So he's talking about the sound, isn't he? When he crescendos to Big Love, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is and that song Big Love is a great way to kick off the album. It's it's a really sort of if I can say this, it's a man swinging his around in musical form. Yes. He's there going, one of the lyrics says I wake up but only to, you know, it's literally like I'm putting myself out there, I'm, you know, being the alpha. That's what the song is all about. You know, being a player, it's a great way to, and when they do it live, they do the song very differently. It's just with a guitar, and it's a lot faster, and that's on one of the live albums, and one of the greatest hits as well, I believe.
Movie Versaries.
It won 3 Oscars, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenplay, was nominated for a bunch of others as well, including cinematography, editing, and music. In 2006, the WGAs announced it was the greatest screenplay ever written. That was, of course, 12 years before Bohemian Rhapsody was released, though. Timing is everything.
Yeah. It's okay. Like, some giants have to topple.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This Podcast Network.